Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had cheap.
Well, he never heated enough the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be alright.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Football Family, the 42.ie's dedicated football podcast. It is me, your host, David Snead, and I am joined by a very busy man, Mr. Shane Keegan. How has the emotions been of the last week? Successfully navigated one stage of the playoff process, about 14 more games to go, is it?
Yeah, it does feel like that. I'll tell you that. It does feel like that. Happy out. When did we last talk? Oh, yeah, we spoke the last day week. Of the first leg, wasn't it?
Yeah, the day of the first leg.
So, essentially it was that first leg that got us through, I suppose, in reality. I'm always conscious how much Football Manager shite I talk, but like it is impossible to say anything. Like,
yeah, but at least it's actual Football Manager shite and not Football Manager shite from the computer game.
Not between the sides, blah, blah, blah. But there was absolutely nothing between the sides, David. Like, there really, really wasn't over the course of the two games. Every single stat you look at shows how little there was between the two sides. I mean, Aaron Dobbs had a shot in injury time flies over the crossbar at the end of the second leg. Like, that could just so easily have flown into the back of the net and
we're all heading for
penalties.
I was going to say, but what were you thinking though when Wexford score in Down St. Combs?
Yeah, it wasn't a major problem really, to be honest. Like, there was no way the whole thing was going to go without a hiccup, and we spoke about that a lot. Is, in fact, I think nearly the last thing I said before we went out is, lads, I genuinely believe that This is going to be decided based on how we react when things go wrong. Because something was bound to go wrong at some stage. And to be fair, they did react really, really well. They reacted really well. I don't know, have you seen the conditions?
It was the playoff game
that had to be decided, it would have been pulled. Like, it was absolutely mental, the rain that came down.
But that's even now playing a part, isn't it, in terms of what's going to be, because the actual venue is 100% confirmed. It's supposed to be Turner's Cross, isn't it, for yourselves in Waterford, or is that actually going to be happening?
Suppose by the time the podcast goes out, it might be breaking news, but it's breaking news at the moment. I just got confirmation in the last half an hour that it is confirmed for 5 o'clock in Turner's Cross. Yeah.
So it's confirmed. So that's okay. So
that's a nice one.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know what I mean? That's the word would be, if I was filing an intro, I would say tantalising.
Tantalising is a good way of putting it, yeah. It's a brilliant place to be in. I'm distracted now because I'm after getting sent through a picture message from Lee Stacey that I'm assuming is going to be, yes, there it is, David.
I just saw it.
Yeah. Literally just confirmed officially there now.
Just saw it there.
For 5 o'clock on Saturday, so no, look, bring it on. Look, they finished, I don't know how many points did they finish ahead of us in the league, you know, that kind of shows just how heavy favourites they'll be for it and all that, but
it's a one-off.
It's a one-off. Just going back to the game itself, and I'll try and do a better attempt at talking about it this time, because I half broke into crying on my two previous attempts to on this one, but like, for me, the story around it is, the guy who got our winner, right, James O'Leary, he is, you know the phrase, he's the kind of fella that you want your daughter to marry, that sort of line. Like, this fella is just, David, I swear to God, the absolute salt of the earth kind of young fella.
I thought you were gonna say the opposite.
No, I wouldn't do it like that. He's absolutely unbelievable, and he has been riddled with injuries all season long. I think he started like one game for us, and that was away to Galway in a match that he got man of the match in. And then the injuries flared up again because he's got so much ability, young Jamesy. But he's like, he's recently getting a new job. He has got a new job at working with children with autism. And his own brother is autistic. But I didn't even know his own brother was autistic at the time when I got a phone call looking for a job reference from them. And like, I literally could not think of a better person to be working with people with kids with difficulties. I really, really couldn't. So in all, look, he's an unbelievable fella, and you know, he's had a tough season. He has had a tough season. So for him to be the man who, having starting only his, is that his second start since he got back from injury? Yeah, probably only his third start in the entire season, pop up with the winner. It's just unbelievable. And I also had a bit of a laugh at where the assist came from, because I was in a, I was in the dressing room and you're doing the whole talk and you're talking through the game plan, do this, do that, and do the other. And then at the end of it all, I says, and look, lads, fuck it. If none of that works, just give the ball to Jack. and that's kind of how it, that's kind of how it played out with Jack coming up with a brilliant assist, you know.
But the proper name for the scale for that, about being the type of person you want to bring your daughter bring home, it's the Seamus Coleman scale, isn't it? That's how that is. So won't the Seamus Coleman, where is he at?
He's whole hog Seamus Coleman, I'm telling you. He's whole hog Seamus Coleman, that's for sure, yeah.
All right, well, in fairness, like, this is a big week for you, but it's also been an enjoyable week, I say, for the last few days for yourself as well, but especially for Stephen Bradley. Although he was a bit miffed that Cork City never gave his Shamrock Rovers players, Champions League winners, I was like, no, haven't gone that far, but four in a row winners, but they didn't get the Guard of Honour. Obviously, I was at Richmond Park on Friday when they sealed the deal, and it was just, again, just the quality off the bench that torn the game for them as well. Like Dylan Watts, the cross, Aaron Green scoring, and then Graham Bourke's finishing. They're obviously deserved winners, and like there was a lot of happiness, a lot of joy. Obviously, it was very telling that Stephen Bradley again talking about wanting something to the board now to give him the backing to go and do a five in a row and build on the success they've had. And then, although as Dan McDonnell, who you know yourself as well, he tweeted out from when he was down at Cork last night, Stephen Bradley was holding two bottles of Moët champagne that had been gifted to him by Cork City and Richie Holland while complaining that Cork didn't give a Guard of Honour. I don't think it's a massive deal, I've got to be honest. Like, I don't know, like, do you know what I mean? It's maybe a bit just, I don't know, I just feel a bit...
Yeah, look, I can completely and utterly see the situation that Richie found himself in. And I think, look, he outlined it himself. You know, under normal sort, this is not an anti, as much as they might like to try and build it up to be, this is not an anti-Shamrock Rovers gesture. It's absolutely not. And it's not a show of disrespect, in my opinion. It's a manager who has found himself in a situation where he's getting ready to steal his side for a relegation promotion playoff, who's new in the job, who is still conscious of the you know, the respect within his dressing room and the respect from within his fan base. And I find it very hard to see how Richie could have done anything other than what he did, which was try to show respect to Shamrock Rovers and honour their achievement in every other way, bar the most obvious visual one, which would potentially, well, would certainly have been portrayed by his sport base as being weak, and may even have been portrayed within his own dressing room as being weak. And, you know, that's why he kind of had to take the stand. Now, you know, I'm trying to be all things to all men here, but I say that, you know, I also think Stephen is within his rights to have a bit of a dig about it, because he doesn't care about Richie's circumstances. He only cares about his club. But yeah, look, it's a kind of a big story that's a non-story, really, at the same time, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, one story that's certainly not a non-story, and it's biggest, obviously, we had it up on the 42, and I know it was around because it was something that was kind of developing after Friday night. It's just the interest that's being shown now in Najrazi at Shamrock Rovers. Like, it's Real Madrid, Arsenal, Chelsea. There's a few other clubs now mentioned in terms of Man City will be in that mix as well, and possibly as well, I think it was Atletico Madrid. So again, Dan was reporting in the Indo, but again, we spoke about him last week, didn't we? Or you kind of, he's a player you would have obviously seen. It kind of ties in a little bit in terms of where Rovers are at, where this is where their model works so well, where they lose a lad who's been on a professional contract since he was 16 at the club, but they can lose and possibly lose a player like that and it will be of benefit to them financially, but it's not going to weaken them in terms of where they're at as a club, and if anything, it's just going to enhance that reputation further about what they can offer players. You know, it's kind of the strength of where Rovers are at, despite all the criticism that's being flung at them about being older, and like any team, there's obviously going to be an element of a refresh needed. But it does seem as if they've just hit that sweet spot in terms of where their squad is at and players developing through. Where, yeah, listen, if he decides to stay on, he's going to be a huge asset to them. If not, it's not as if it's going to be crippling them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, and this is kind of the dilemma that a manager finds himself in with a promising young player coming through as well. Like, he is one of the very, very best around. But because he's at effectively the biggest club in the country right now, you know, would he be a regular starter for Stephen Bradley and Shamrock Rovers next season? You know, probably not. Because Stephen is, as he has indicated, he is going to want to go out into the transfer market and get, I'm sure, talent that's tried and tested. So I think as he would still continue to be a bit part, as maybe more than a bit part next season. But, you know, for the rest of us, for most normal teams, you know, to lose a player of that potential who you're potentially looking at building your club around for next 3-4 years, it would be an absolute hammer blow, but it's just not the case at Rovers. And like you say, it's just another sign that the model is working, continues to work. Like the law of the League of Ireland over the last bloody 30 years or longer, I suppose, 30 years at all, I'd have my eyes on it. The law of the League of Ireland is what goes up must come down, and usually comes down fairly fucking quickly after it goes up. But okay, you look at Rovers at the moment, and it's just hard to see when or how or where things start to go wrong for them, you know?
Yeah, like, and listen, like, Bradley's been open about it in terms of some of the issues behind the scenes with elements of the board and stuff like that. So he's kind of, it's clear that it's not as if everything is 100% rose. Like, but that's just the nature, I suppose, of a lot of football clubs. There's always going to be those elements kind of in the background. Like, I referenced it again over the weekend. If you consider what happened at Rovers after they won the 4 in a row in 87, like, Glenmalure Park gets sold, Milltown, they become that kind of just like they were effectively homeless, were going from ground to ground. They can't, whereas now they've literally just built a stand that would bring the stadium capacity up to 10,000, more new offices and stuff. They're adding to that. If the contrast couldn't be, it's greater, it should all be set up there. And then on the flip side of that, you're looking at, say, some of those player teams who are hoping, well, who's going to actually come up and challenge. Like Derry, you would have thought this year had that sense of stability about them while adding, but they just haven't. You would like to think and hope that they can come back and do it. We've spoken there about some young players like Pats, for example. Like John Daly was chatting after the match on Friday, and he was up front saying, listen, Sam Curtis has kind of made it clear that he wants to head off. He's turning 18 in December, so he'll have options in the UK. There's other still interest around, say, Mason Amelia and Adam Murphy too. Then you look at Shelbourne, obviously what Damien Duff, they could possibly, with the games happening at the week, they could finish fourth and still not qualify for Europe this year, depending on who wins the cup with Pats or Bowes. But they're losing a player like Jack Moylan, who is so important. So like, a lot of the Chase and Pack are going to have to add, but are also coming from a position of weakness already, in the sense that they're losing important players. The Rovers will as well, like, possibly they'll probably lose players that are happy to move on, but they could possibly lose Rory Gaffney, who's out of contract because of the issues around the budget, and they could also possibly lose Jack Bourne, depending on what he decides. So it's still a bit of a state of flux there, do you know what I mean? Like, there could be serious kind of moves still happening in the league for over the winter.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, effectively, you look at the last, you know, decline is maybe a hard word to use, but you look at the position of power that Dundalk had been in, right? And like, for that, for another team to rise to power, it requires both them doing everything right, but it also requires the team that are in power doing a hell of a lot wrong, or doing some mad stuff, which is probably the best way of describing what went on at Dundalk for a few years. I can't see Shamrock Rovers appointing Stephen Bradley's replacement being a man who has never actually managed an adult football team in his life. It's unlikely that they'll take that same course of action.
The banter era, as some football fans might call it.
So, like, it's just, as I say, it's there might be, we might see it as chinks of light in terms of, you know, Bradley's bit of infighting with the board and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm sure you'll find it'll all be ironed out reasonably well. And yeah, then can any of the rest gain ground? I think you've summarised it very, very well. Everybody's going to, everybody's trying to fight to stay where they're at. Never mind kick on from there at the moment, based on the players that they're going to lose. And then, as we know, the pool of talent here within the country to pull from, like, I'm not sure. You look at particularly Rovers, I suppose, Dundalk as well to a certain extent. You look at Bowes with Georgie Kelly. So the last really great UCD team, right? You had Gary O'Neill heads off to Rovers, Greg Sloggett heads off to Dundalk, Georgie goes off to Dundalk, and Bowes and Pats. He'd actually bounced around all three.
Connor Cairns, was he that he was that, or was he just after?
He was, yeah. He was the keeper in that side. I think, like, you talk about where the pool of talent comes from for the big clubs. More often than not, it is UCD it comes from. And I'm not 100% sure if there's that depth of talent there at the moment for the big clubs to raid. There are a few there. Jack Keeney is a lovely footballer in that. But, you know, again, does it mean... Essentially, the question I'm asking here is, who do Rovers sign to improve?
I was going to ask you that question, Shane. I'm not going to lie. I'm the presenter here. If Gavin wasn't on leave, I would have asked him as well. This is the thing. Like, you're looking at it like where did it go? Like, it depends who they might lose. Like, did he stick with it and say, well, do you know what? Like, Johnny Kenny, is he going to stick around? Obviously, he's only on loan from Celtic. Marcus Pilm, obviously, he's a loan player. Like, again, that's something over the next little while trying to suss out. Well, what do you see? Like, you kind of. Some of the kind of intimations getting so far is that it will be names that people might know already, that who Rovers could be going for, but then because of the issues that have kind of been flagged, we don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I wonder, because of the improved attendances and reasonably stable finances, I'm reluctant to say that too loudly, but reasonably stable finances at most of the, let's call it, best big six, big seven League of Ireland clubs. You'd wonder, are we going to enter an era of starting to see a few transfer fees within the league? You know, they're still a rarity. They are still a rarity, no doubt. But again, to speak of the one I know, you look at how well Shamrock Rovers have worked out from paying Galway a few quid to sign a league race. Like, that, you know, that should inspire others to say, okay, let's have a look around here. And instead of looking for players who are out of contract, well, let's look at who we want, regardless of what their contract situation is. And if there's players there that we want but are under contract at other League of Ireland clubs, let's go and see, can we prize them away by offering a transfer fee?
You'd imagine that as well. Like, I can't remember the issue, but say with Lee Grace, I'm guessing he would have been maybe, what, a year or so into a contract. It comes down to contract lengths as well. Like, if, let's be honest, a board might not sanction a deal for a player who they know in 4, 5, 6 months' time is going to be free. Do you know what I mean? Whereas it does come back to that again, doesn't it, of players being on longer-term contracts. And this is longer than just even 2 years. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember Rovers had that flood of players where, I could be wrong on this, and I'm almost sure that Sean Gannon signed a 4-year contract at Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, yeah, so, I mean, yeah.
And, like, that was seen as a major outlier, almost a change in a kind of tournament. We were thinking, this could be a moment here now where things could begin to change, but just the nature of where it's at, it's hard to plan like that as well, you know?
It is, yeah. And look, again, there has been some improved contracts handed out, that's for sure. But I still think there's also plenty of players who, you know, maximum they're going to have under contract is 12 months. And I can see that happening. I can absolutely see. I'm trying to think of a good example. You know, I don't know.
What you're thinking is just to give you a chance to have that, to get your train of thought there, it's almost like, do you pick your battles here and say, well, do you know what? We've got a few young lads who we feel actually that's where the value could be in holding them down to longer contracts. So if clubs do want to come in, they have to buy them, not just wait and pay the minuscule compensation. Or do you go to those mid-20s lads who probably aren't going to go away to England again or Britain or Europe or whatever, or League of Ireland, are going to be kind of elite League of Ireland players, tie them down, because if someone does want to come in, you know, that's where you have to kind of maybe gauge or kind of balance things out a little bit, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And look, I suppose here's, I'm just, as usual, me not having strong enough confidence in my own opinions. I need stats to back. I need stats to back everything up.
Stats and facts get you nowhere.
I'm just looking here, and here's a prime example. I have no idea what Dale Rooney's current contract situation is, but let's assume that he still has 12 months to go at Drogheda. He has finished as the highest assists in the League of Ireland Premier Division. He hasn't finished. There's still a round to go, isn't there? Yeah. But at the moment, he's the highest assist in the League of Ireland Premier Division. Like, that's serious going for a fella who's, you know, from very much from one of the smaller sides, or I'm sure there's a better term than smaller sides. You know, would one of the teams that qualify for Europe go and say, listen, here's, I don't know, what would they need to offer? 40, 50K, there or thereabouts? For Dale Rooney,
I suppose it comes back to how it would be viewed in terms of where they would say, well, what's the ceiling for that player? Like, they could, would they look at him and say, well, genuinely, like, there's more here from him. If we can get a hold of him, maybe that's something that they would have to take into consideration. Or would it be looked at, well, do you know what, he's had a smashing season, but that's probably where he's at. He's not going to go any further than that. And like, that's not just specifically with Dale and stuff. That's just thinking of, like, any football club, isn't it? Like, where you're looking at, I think, and sometimes players get to an age and they could be not middling or run of the mill, but could take it along, and then can begin to actually just have a serious progression. And if he's doing that, there, surely clubs like, well, if we get a hold of him, could you get even more from it, or is that pretty much the ceiling? Do you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, sometimes clubs look to bring in players because they think that they can, as you said, they can get even better, and therefore they can potentially, you know, keep them under contract and sell them on to England. Yeah. I think in Lee's case, it wasn't even that. I think in Lee's case, Stephen Bradley looked at his team, looked at a hole that he needed to fill, and saw a fully developed player. Okay, still a young player, but a fully developed player that could become the bedrock of his defence for the next 3-4 years. And that's the sort of signing I would like to see. I would like John Daly to have a look and say, right, what do I need here? Okay, who fits that profile? Let's go and sign him. Or just pluck John Daly out of the sky there. But obviously, any of the managers that are in a position to potentially have a few, like Damien Duff, could find himself in that position, you know, if we're to believe Stephen Bradley's comments on his budget.
The budget, yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. I do think we could see a couple. I do think we could see a couple over the next few months before the start of the new season, where there's transfer fees within the League of Ireland, possibly.
Definitely one to keep an eye on in terms of seeing, well, who might be the ones to lead the way on that. In terms of a transfer that's happening, Jack Moylan, like, he bowed out in some way with a hat-trick for Shells against UCD on Friday. Still has to get the job done. You'd imagine he'd have a big say up in Drogheda on Friday as well, if they were to finish fourth. But if they do get European football, depending on what happens with the Cup, he obviously won't be a part of it. It's an interesting one, because a few players have gone over the last little while, say, to League One and all, you think of, like, the likes of, say, Promise on Macherde, you see Dara Bourne's gone, Dawson Devoy is gone, I'm sure of it, even Danny Mandrew, a couple of, even just before that as well, a few have gone. You wonder how he's going to do. He kind of falls into the category, I'd say, of he's still a young player who's come on, but even the improvement this season to last year in terms of impacting and being effective in games, just, he's gone to a different level. And his third goal, obviously the finish is great in Everton, and the way he waits to finish, but the touch out of the air to put it into his stride was just fantastic as well. But there's always those little moments with him in games where you just see that bit of class. And he's gone to a club now where the manager's already changed before he's arrived, but he's one who you hope will go there and really kick on, hopefully, again.
Yeah, look, and I think what he's developed is just a bit more of an end product. You know, I think anybody who saw him prior to this season could see that there was huge potential in the player, massive potential in the player. But, you know, the old, I suppose, the kind of American sports phrase of, you need to get your numbers up. Like, that's, you know, Jack Moylan was, you know, if you were at the game, he would have jumped out to you as a serious player. But if you were a stats geek like me and you were going looking at numbers at the end of the year, he wasn't necessarily appearing on any of your lists. He wasn't maybe coming up with the goals or with the assists, whereas now he's absolutely ticking those boxes. He's not just easy on the eye and not just able to grab a game by control. There's numbers now that back that up for him. And look, it's going to be very interesting to see how it works out for him. As you say, the whole manager thing, you know, is a little bit of worry. I wouldn't say a worry, but maybe a small bit of a concern that the man who actually signed off on signing now, the way things are gone now, it mightn't necessarily have been the manager that identified him. It was probably the club that identified him more so than the manager, but the manager would still probably have signed off on him. And all of a sudden, the manager who signed off on him isn't the manager that's at the club. Mm. So let's hope that he can get over there and make an early impact. Coming in mid-season as well is never the easiest thing for Irish players. That's always another little kind of hurdle that they have to deal with, you know?
No, it is, isn't it? Especially when he's going to be coming to a club where there is that element of kind of just upheaval, and he's going to need to have a bit of time off. It's been a long old season, and then like it's one of them where, fair enough, if he can go in and hit the ground running, great. But it's almost like have that as your bedding in process, get used to your surroundings and stuff. But in football as well, it's like you can't really think of that either. Like, you probably spend a couple of years. I'm actually 100% certain on the length of his contract. I think I'm guessing it's about 2 years, possibly three. But even then, it's not as if, you know, we go in like maybe there's get my feet under the table here and get a sense of how things are going. Like sometimes you just have to, if you're playing well, just grasp what you can and make that impression, you know.
Like Jack Whelan could arrive over, and within the first week, the first thing he could be told is, we're sending you out on loan to get some minutes. Like that's reality. That's 100% what could happen, particularly with a new manager having come in and might have his own ideas around who he wants and who he doesn't want. But look, equally, he could arrive out there. He could, you know, immediately catch the manager's eye early on in training, which he's fully capable of doing, I would think, and it could kick on really, really well for him.
You said there about getting your numbers up, padding stats, but getting those stats up. No better possible link than for a chance to us to talk about the only Premier League story over the weekend we're talking about. There's nothing else we're talking about of anything that happened in the Premier League other than Evan Ferguson. So did you see the stat that went out about what whose record he's managed to is equal?
So I did see a mention of Wayne Rooney, but I'm not really sure what the record was or what the context is.
So he's now scored 11 Premier League goals in the calendar year. Evan Ferguson, and I saw Opta at the weekend put out that he's the first teenager to do that in the Premier League since Wayne Rooney, which I think was back in 2005. So Rooney, and in fairness, credit this to Mark McCadden at the Irish Daily Star, he put a bit more context even onto those numbers. So obviously Rooney was coming in at the end of his teens, 19, obviously was at Man United, but he did it. Have it here now. Where are we now? Hold on. Achieved that record in terms of goals in, where are we now, for Rooney, in 3,148 minutes. That was for each 11 Premier League goals. So if you want to just divide that by 90 real quick, that'll give you an indication of how many games. And then whereas Evan Ferguson did it in just over 1,434 minutes. So that works out, fair play to Mark for breaking this down, hitting the back of the net in the Premier League once every 130 minutes. But the most important thing out of all that is just the nature of the goal.
It's top class. Again, it really is. The way he adjusts. So when the ball gets turned over and when Gross receives the ball, what Evan Ferguson is trying to do is he's trying to play on the shoulder of the left-sided centre half, because the fullback is pushed on a bit, and he's trying to play and he's looking for one to be played in front of him that he can run onto and just strike potentially first time. But Gross, in my opinion, takes a touch too many. And like for me, where he takes the second touch, I just think that can be the true ball there and then. And by taking another touch, it essentially changes the whole situation for Ferguson. And I had kind of half thought the chance is gone here. But Ferguson just delays and doesn't dart in behind and just stays on the shoulder. Obviously, he's just outside the 18-yard box as he receives the pass. But I'm not even fully sure. I've only seen the one angle of it. So I'd love to see it from the other angle, because he seems to control and shoot in almost, it's called a half touch, I think, is what I've heard it described on in kind of coaching courses and that. Right. It's like he takes this half touch that somehow doesn't and it's definitely what catches the keeper as well.
There's no backlift.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, I'm controlling it. No, I'm not. I'm actually shooting all into one movement here. It's just an outstanding finish. It really is.
Part of just like the nature of it, like it was just so smooth in terms of, like, as you said, like it's, you don't even see his foot come back almost. It's weird. It's just so, it kind of, it was a little bit similar in terms of the shot he had for Ireland outside the box, in the sense of he just kind of caressed the ball, even from that distance. Then we hit the, obviously hit the post and went out and went wide. But like, even with, as you say, he's caught the keeper on the hop, and it's like Gatton, it's like, you don't have to. I think Robbie Keane was saying, you don't always have to smash it. If you're thinking a step ahead of, say, a defender or a goalkeeper, and you're accurate with your finish and you connect well with it, like, more often than not, you're going to score. You pass the ball into the net. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can do that, and he's able to. But he seems to be capable of doing it from even far out. Like, even you go back to the goal, the hat trick goal, which I think was on his left foot as well. I think it was the second goal in the game against Newcastle. Maybe it was the right foot, but he obviously puts power on the shot, but it's not a wild swing. Everything about is the technique, and that's what kind of feeds into everything. It kind of, I'm at the stage now where I'm still kind of like, I just need him to keep on scoring to reinforce this thing that he actually is this good, because part of it is still thinking, and maybe it's just like, not anything to do with him himself, but like in football, you never know what can happen. It's so bloody difficult. Do you know what I mean? Like, stay, have that focus. You know, you see him go a couple of games, maybe not starting and coming off and, or not scoring, and then you're like, oh, whatever. But like, he seems to just, I still have that just focus, and it's clear, even that focus, even in that finish, do you know what I mean? Just clinical.
Yeah, but look, it's a positive thing in itself that it hasn't been a continuous upward trajectory. Do you know, there has been those few dips where he doesn't score, or where he's out of sight for a couple of weeks and he just comes back again within a week or two. So look, I think we're probably at the stage now where we can stop worrying that we're getting overly carried away. I think we're getting sufficiently carried away with somebody who's shown, you know, he's around for the long term. We've had so many false dawns, and that's not to write any of those other players off. You've seen how quickly a fella can go from being in the bin like Aaron Connolly to back on the radar. You've got Ida, you've got Parrott, you've got Obafemi, you've got Ogbene, all those. But look, I would be surprised if any of those could even put forward a case that that Ferguson isn't a tier or two ahead of them.
Yeah, because we saw, wasn't there quotes from the Zerbi as well? He was talking about, you know, he can play better. And I suppose that's probably what he needs now as well, isn't it? Is still having that, maybe a coach brave enough, like, say, the Zerbi, to actually, because he does seem to change the team quite a lot. Do you know what I mean? Maybe if it was a different manager, maybe not as, I wouldn't say, not so much confident, but maybe just assured of what he's doing, you could already think, oh, feck, I just have to play him. I have to play him. And that could almost be to his detriment. So maybe maybe the whole environment that he's in at the moment is actually ideal for him in that sense. You know what I mean? Where he's going to have those demands still placed on him to do better and stuff like that. And all, without having the pressure to deliver all the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's all well. And the other thing that obviously works in his favour is that because they're in Europe,
yeah,
there's loads of games to be shared around.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it is just the two of us on this podcast this week, and obviously Gavin is off, and you have a very busy week, so it is a bit more of a bite sized pod. I do want to finish before we go, just as a bit of a plug for the interview I did with Darren Gibson, which went up on the site last week. I don't know if you had a chance to read the show.
I did.
Thank God, because I didn't want to have to talk about it myself. Thank God. Well,
nah, as a powerful stuff.
No, yeah, thank you. It was, and it was obviously from him. I always, it's interesting because people say, "Oh, great interview," but like, unless someone's willing to talk and actually be open about it, you're not gonna to get that stuff. It was
took gold there, that's for sure.
But that comes down to him in the sense of just being open to actually chatting. But it even shows you what people can be dealing with in their careers. And like I know you spoke about it last week, you know, beforehand about your match, where, you know, you end up losing a player and not able to play, and stuff that's going on and dealing with, like, it's just, and again, it kind of feeds into the little thing with Evan Ferguson, where you can, I don't know, you always wonder, like, so much stuff can go wrong for people. Do you know what I mean? In football, it is so delicate. Like, and I was joking earlier, it was the only story football-wise in the Premier League. But you see, we say with United and all, where they're at. But like, football can be so delicate, and like, you get a right couple of people coming into a dressing room or a wrong one, that can change everything, and things can change so quickly. And even just from speaking to, when I was chatting to Darren and what he went through, and hopefully if people haven't read it by now, I would encourage you to do so, because it would just open up, even at, when a player can get to that level and is still battling and dealing with stuff that people would have no comprehension of.
Yeah, 100%. And look, your piece has come out pretty much at a identical time that your identical twin in England, Jake Humphreys, has brought out the Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah, no, it's true, yeah.
The Danny Drinkwater piece, which comes along similar, very similar-ish lines to Darren Gibson's. Just, look, like, it shouldn't be a shock to us. Imagine being, you know, inevitably most of these guys are still quite young when it happens, the amount of money that's involved, but just the whole concept of, you are set for stardom. Actually, no, we've decided you're not set for stardom. You're done. Mm-hmm. And it's literally almost overnight that seems to have happened in both players' cases. So, like, imagine the fallout from that and trying to deal with it mentally. Like, it's no wonder they experience serious problems and issues.
It kind of makes you think as well, even as a coach and as a manager, it kind of shows you, it's mad even how much we talk about football managers and the structures that are there and how it's changed to 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Where you look at, say, clubs now, it's almost like it's baffling that clubs wouldn't have technical directors, what you call them, sporting directors, directors of football, whatever you have. Whereas 15 years ago, they were being spoken about as if, well, they're undermining the manager. Whereas now, that's what's needed, because the coach and the head coach is part of the structure, because that coach has to do more than just being an audio manager. He does have to have that emotional intelligence as well to try and tap into that side of things with a dressing room and try and understand what's going on. But it's very hard to, you know what I mean? Like, that's where clubs have to have other things going. Because, like, for example, for the, I don't know, because I'm guessing there would be some people who haven't read the article, but what Darren Gibson is talking about is, say, obviously his own feelings that he was going through and anxiety that he was suffering from and depression, but then having an addiction to sleeping pills. Everyone knows about what happened with his drink driving incidents, but then it was all a culmination of how he was feeling personally. Then you compound it by matters that were happening professionally. When you go through injuries and you begin to see things slip away in your career and your body maybe struggling, and then when you're not adept to actually talking about that and being open about that, that's where you would say that clubs do have that responsibility to have that infrastructure in place, especially at Premier League level clubs. And you would imagine it is the case now, surely, that they would. But then sometimes anecdotally, like, even people get in touch, it's still not 100% the case, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you see, you can have all the money in the world, like, to be able to financially afford to do these things, but unless the want or the willingness is there, and even some clubs who are doing it are probably doing it to be seen to be doing it. Do you know what I mean? It's a tick-a-box exercise, and then does it actually have the desired effect either at all? It probably doesn't. And, like, you know, you can point a finger at an uncaring manager, but look, I suppose from my point of view, like, you know, a manager does have a million and one things going on, and he's probably quite possibly trying to manage his own mental health. Yeah. So he is, and in terms of trying to keep an eye for potentially, you know, 25 different people in his dressing room and trying to assess where everybody is at, there's definitely such a need for a broader support mechanism. It really is.
And it's kind of on a different level of scale. We even say, so one of your interviewers that was up on the site was Paul Fennessy's interview with Eddie Nolan, and he's even talking about that similar sense. One of the things that struck me is, man, even said, you know, he's lucky he was able to stay in the same area for 6 or 7 years. Like, that can even be viewed as a form of success, where you don't have to uproot all the time. And like, the career he's had, and he's obviously made the decision during the season he would have been involved with Waterford to step away, and you see his story, and he, like, again, was involved with Ireland, not the same number of caps, but like, was on the cusp of a Premier League career as well. And you kind of see how they would, players like Eddie would have to deal with it. And you see what, when he has that chat with Fenno, where, like, they're on that brink, you know, they're so close, and then they go down, and then their career becomes something totally different. And that's something else you have to deal with.
Yeah, and look, he was, you know, again, he was a very solid fella. I know the family quite well. He had twin brothers won the League of Ireland with me at Wexford, Brian and Shane Nolan. Very, very solid family. So he would have had, you know, he would have had the right kind of ground and the right kind of mentality to deal with, okay, I thought it was going to be at this level, but it's actually going to be at this level. But you know what? Being at this level is a serious, serious level of success too. Mm. Whereas for a lot of others, I think the idea that it's not going to be in the shining lights of the Premier League, it's going to be in League One or League Two, just doesn't float their boat, and that's where the wheels start to come off then, you know.
Well, listen, Shane, best of luck this week. But the time this, well, it's on, it's five, the tweet came out, was it 5 o'clock now? Is the new kickoff, and definitely confirmed for Turner's Cross.
Yep, confirmed for Turner's Cross this Saturday, 5 o'clock. Bring it on.
We've had a bit of
a discussion in the 42.ie members football WhatsApp group that all 42.ie members are going to be get free free attendance at the game at the cost of the 42.ie.
Oh, really?
What do you think?
I was going to say, well, if I can make a plea to actually use that money for the next interview, I have to do that. Would actually be much appreciated. But by the time we do chat next, we will know the outcome. And we'll also know the outcome of the Republic of Ireland women's team's second game against Albania. They had a comprehensive win in Tallaght on Friday, 5-1. You'd expect that they should ease past, and we'll have a kind of more comprehensive roundup of where Ireland are at there as well. But Shane, you've got enough in your hands until then. So best of luck, and we'll chat to you next week.
Cheers, David. Great stuff.
No, but take care, pal.